Hey, really quick, before the episode starts, I've got a little announcement. As you know, People Pleaser is mixed and mastered and brought to you by Marmalade Music. Marmalade Music is an audio engineering company that is ready to bring your EP, your single, your album, your podcast, whatever your audio project is, they are ready to bring it to the next level and make everything sound better. And right now, I was talking to Chris over at Marmalade Music, little Chrissy Bear, and he wants to do a new promotion. The 20% was really dope. He was offering 20% off to People Pleaser listeners, and he just told me he wants to do this new thing. And when he told me what he wanted to do, I was like, that's a little too much, bud. Like, that's, you're giving away too much stuff there. And he said, no, I want to do it. And I said, are you sure? And he said, yes, I'm sure. And I said, are you really sure you're sure? And he said, yes, I'm sure. Just announced the promotion. And I said, okay, calm down. And he said, no, you calm down. And I said, okay, you're right. I'm getting a little heated here. I'll just announce it. And he said, yeah, please do that. Okay. Or I'm pulling my sponsorship of your podcast. And I said, okay, now you need to calm down. And he said, yes, you're right. I'm sorry. And we had a little hug over it. Not really, because we live in different states, but, you know, like digitally, like I sent him a little gif of two friends hugging, and he sent me back like Key and Peele going noice, you know, from that sketch where they go noice. He sent me back that one. Anyway, this is the promotion that he wants me to announce. Right now, if you go to marmalademusicslc.com and say that you're an avid listener of People Pleaser, Chris is going to mix and master your first song for free. I didn't say three, like 300. I said free. Okay? F-R-E-E. You know those TurboTax commercials? Free for free, free, free. He's going to do your first song for free. He's so confident that you're going to love the product and you're going to love the result of what he brings to your project that he's going to do your first song for free. Okay? And he also was like, make sure you tell everyone to go listen to Unknown, the new single that he mixed and mastered for me, Austin Archer, streaming everywhere. I don't know why he added that last part. I was like, you don't need to add that, Chris. And he was like, add it. And I was like, calm down. I'll add it, you know? But that's what he said. Go to marmalademusicslc.com. Tell him that you listen to People Pleaser and tell him what your favorite part of Unknown was. I mean, you don't have to do that. I added that last part, I'll admit that, but it would be a fun little detail because he mixed and mastered it and you could tell him what you liked about it. And he's going to do your first song for free. Dude. Okay, here's the episode. Start today by talking a bit about the episode I did with my friend Sean Sacchino about drugs. It's been said to me that our tone on that episode was maybe a little too frivolous and loose, and that perhaps we should have spoken with a bit more severity and reverence for the topic. I'm only bringing that up because I see today's episode as a sort of sister discussion to that one, and because, spoiler alert, my guest today and I both talk about the topic at hand with that same sense of frivolity that Sean and I had about psychedelics. Now, this happens for a few reasons. On the episode with Sean, we were trying to walk a fine line where we acknowledged the seriousness of addiction and the dangers of drug abuse of any kind, while simultaneously unpacking and debunking certain long-held societal stigmas against certain substances. If you heard that episode, you may remember that I opened the discussion by saying that we were going to be more or less making an argument as to why you, the listener, should consider your biases against these substances if you have them, and open your mind to the possibility that drugs are primarily utilitarian things. They're medicinal tools, and their value as being good or bad is defined by how they are used. There are remarkable studies being done right now with all kinds of illegal substances with fascinating results. People are using MDMA therapy to recover from intense grief, PTSD, and addiction. People are taking low-grade doses of ketamine for the same reasons. It's an experimental but undeniably noble use of certain substances that could be viewed through a certain lens as nothing other than dangerous party drugs. Our tone was in no way meant to be dismissive of the true horrors that addiction and drug abuse brings to so many lives the world over. It was simply meant as a loving invitation to recontextualize and re-examine stigmas you may or may not hold about certain illegal substances and the people who use them. And that brings me to the discussion on today's episode. Because today, we are talking about a legal drug. Today we're talking about perhaps humanity's most popular and well-endorsed drug. Today we are talking about a drug used publicly and completely unimpeachably at such high-profile occasions as the White House Correspondents' Dinner, the Royal Wedding, and every awards show ever. A drug whose hilarious Super Bowl ads are looked forward to by families across America each year. A drug that teammates literally shower each other in when winning a major championship. A drug that is so ubiquitously entrenched in our culture that we could hardly imagine a world without it. And also, a drug with the second highest annual death toll behind nicotine, and that holds the distinction of being the third largest cause of preventable deaths each year. Today, we are talking about alcohol. And you'll have to forgive my guest, Patrick, and I for our lackadaisical tone. We're old family friends who have known each other our entire lives. We literally grew up across the street from each other. We're practically family. We're also both recovering alcoholics. And one of the first things we learned in the 12-step program we both adhere to is that people like us are generally incapable of genuine honesty. So what did we do? We did what all good alcoholics in search of a new experience do. We got super duper honest about everything, almost to a fault. So I want to do something I've not done before on the show. I want to issue an official trigger warning. My friend and I are going to be speaking very candidly about our personal experience with this drug. We speak vibrantly and passionately about our individual relationships to alcohol. We are at times very lighthearted and we laugh a lot, not because we don't respect the weight of the topic, but because that's how we've chosen to recover. And because we realize that not everyone drinks like we drank. Some people really are capable of using drugs responsibly and healthily, believe it or not. And because we realize that while our drinking careers were often dark and seemingly hopeless, they were also filled with lots of light, lots of hard lessons learned, lots of fun, lots of good times with good friends, and lots of small revelations that brought us to where we are now. And that's a very, very good thing. A thing both of us are endlessly grateful for. So there's your warning, and here we go. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to my old friend Patrick Williams about alcohol. But Eminem was just like, or no, Chris D'Elia. Because Chris D'Elia still, it's, I think that
he's obscure enough.
I don't think he's ever been as big as he is right now.
Right now, yeah.
Even when he had his show on NBC, and I don't think
He had that first Netflix special that I think kind of launched him to where he is now.
But I think right now, because of YouTube and the podcast and everything, I don't think he's ever been as...
Yeah, I mean, he's in more mainstream shows. Uh-huh. Like, you know, he's getting appearances on...
Yeah.
On stuff. I think that's the next transition for a comedian.
Uh-huh.
It's like, when can I start getting, like, not just, you know, stand-up gigs in every city? Like, when can I start getting, like, roles on TV shows and movies.
Yep. And that's, I mean, again, it's the money ladder where, but I also don't think people realize how much money these guys who are just constantly touring, they fucking rake it.
What do they get, like 10 grand a night or something
like
that?
Crazy. Like, if you can sell out, if you can sell out a 1500 seat theater in, you know, in 20 towns and like go on a little tour, like, holy shit.
Yeah. And they don't they get a part of that?
Oh, of course.
Sales, and then they get like their, whatever.
And
their
then they just get their fee.
Yeah.
They're just their rider. And then they get a cut of ticket sales. And if it's $50 a pop, for every person in the theater,
$20K a night.
Insane. Wow, yeah. These guys are making bank. But then,
that's why they're touring all the time.
Yeah. That's why they're always on the road.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, Bags backing up the Brinks truck, Bags, Bags. That's because
bags,
I make
bags.
Didn't make a dent. I'm down.
Didn't make a dent.
Yeah, and I went down and I bought a new car and guess what? Didn't make a dent.
That's a good accent.
I got a dentless bank account.
Oh, that's a beautiful accent. It's so good.
So funny. Yeah. He doesn't drink, Chris D'Elia.
No, I saw that.
Which, it's not because he's sober. It's just because he never did. Those kind of people boggle my mind.
That blows me.
Blows my mind that there's people who aren't religious, who don't have any moral objection to it, who are just like,
they just don't like it.
I just don't really like drinking.
Well, they probably have been around it so much, and they, you know, they saw family members or parents. Like, those are some people that I know that are like, no, I knew I was going to be an alcoholic. Like, I knew what my family was going to be, so I just stayed away from it. That boggles my mind.
Or there's just people who
don't like
it. Who they can take it or leave it.
Right.
And that really proves, I think, to people like us that who we are.
Oh, yeah.
And what the deal is, because I, even when I was actively drinking, and I don't want the focus of our whole conversation to be about alcoholism. We're going to talk about alcohol, the drug, but definitely it goes, I think it behooves us to begin by saying we're both alcoholics and who don't drink anymore.
Try not to drink anymore.
Who on a day-to-day basis so far have been successful in not drinking for a period of time.
Time, yes. 10 months.
Yeah, I got 18 months on Wednesday.
Nice, dude.
That's crazy.
It's fucking huge.
So crazy. I used to think a week was a really long time. And
For sure. Uh-huh. Like, I used to think that 2 days was a long time.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Or a night out, not drinking.
Taking the night off was even being able to go out and hang out with people
and not drink
was proof.
Oh yeah, we're gonna go karaoke. Great. That was like code word for I'm gonna get fucked up and sing karaoke.
Of course, everything
and
though,
then end up at my house drinking more.
Everything though was code word for I'm gonna get fucked up.
Yeah, there was no.
I got the day off. I'm gonna take myself to the movies, which means I'm gonna go stop at the liquor store, buy a pint of vodka, pour it in my soda at the movies.
I did that.
Yeah. I had a lot of friends come up to me afterwards who were like, I'm so sorry. I didn't like, I feel so bad that like our whole friendship was based on drinking. I didn't realize you had a problem. And I was like, oh, don't worry. Everything in my life was based
around drinking. Yeah.
It wasn't just you.
And by the way, you're probably an alcoholic too. I just don't want to tell you that.
I don't want to hurt your feelings. Because that's not my job to tell anyone about that. But also a lot of my friends. So this is what I was going to say, going to people like D'Elia who can take it or leave it. I kind of assumed that all my friends were like me when I was out there. And what I've come to find out in my 18 months of hanging out with I still hang out with the same people.
Right,
there's a lot of people who have to cut ties and who really can't be. And I've met these people in the rooms who it's like, they cannot be around these old friends because the old friends don't get it, aren't supportive of their sobriety and are just kind of not helpful.
Yeah.
I think we're very lucky to have friends who are very supportive of our sobriety and who cheer us on. And what I've noticed is a lot of my friends now, I have certain friends who I think could benefit from taking a look at their drinking and their drug use. But in general, most of my friends do not drink the way I drank.
Right.
And I've been able to – it's only through the lens of hanging out with them sober that I can see, oh, you really are just having like two or three.
Right.
And then I remember, oh, that's right. Before I would hang out with you, I would pregame because I was embarrassed. I didn't want you to think that I was going overboard. And then I would pressure you to drink more. Yeah. It was always me going, let's get one more. Let's get one more.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if I had that problem. I think it sort of happened. It sort of happened gradually with me, like, because I remember going, I didn't notice that it started getting bad until I was waking up and drinking in the morning. Like, that's when I started to question, because I would go out, like, I would go out to a bar or whatever. Oh, wait, no, I'll take that back. It got bad. It got bad pretty quick.
Yeah.
Okay, because the first time I got really, really drunk, I was at my ex-girlfriend, Brittany,
mm-hmm.
who we knew,
mm-hmm.
And I started – I got pulled over on Thanksgiving coming home from her mother's house.
Yeah.
And she used to drink like a fish.
Yeah.
Like I was like even me not even knowing what that was. And I got my first DUI like right out of the gate. Like,
that's right, a bummer.
Yeah. Like, as soon as I started drinking, I got pulled over on the freeway and got a DUI.
Yeah. And see, it's stuff like I hear people, it's kind of how I feel about people who get sober really young, people who get sober at like 20 or 21. I'm like, oh no, you got out of the game too early. Like, you got to go have a little bit more fun. But then when I realize it's like a lot of these people, if I talk to them long enough, it's like, no, you made the right choice.
Yeah,
like you didn't need to go see what was further down the line. But it is kind of that thing of like a lot of people might start drinking and get an early DUI and go, all right, that's enough. No more. When I got my DUI, I was about 4 years away from the end of my drinking, but I definitely wasn't done. I knew.
I was just getting started. I just left the church.
It was bad luck.
Yeah. Oh, it was total bad luck.
Yeah.
I had met this girl mm-hmm. who we're basically having an affair, and like all this shit was like so wrong, but mm-hmm. so right.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, I've never done this before.
Uh-huh.
Like, here I was like having this crazy, you know, sexual encounter with this married woman, and I started drinking with her and like doing all this stuff. Cause I was Mormon and I didn't do that. That wasn't Patrick's MO.
That's a whole aspect of both of our journeys too, is the thrill of debauchery. Which I think, so this will lead me into what I first want to talk about. Well, I mean, we've already been going, but
yeah,
with the subject of alcohol, which is, I want to start with our favorite things about alcohol.
Okay.
I mean, one of mine, I think, is that the thrill of debauchery.
Yeah.
That was at least where it started. It was something that I was never going to do in my life, and I was committed to never doing when I was a teenager.
Right.
And then that, I took my first drink when I was 19, but I remember that first thing of being like, and this is now the boundary that cannot be uncrossed. I can't go back now. It was green apple rum. And I took a
green apple rum.
Oh, green apple rum, baby.
Wow.
Cause we were college kids who didn't like our booze to not taste like something.
Right. Cause beer was gross.
Yeah. I remember my first beer. I was so shocked at how gross it was.
Really?
I couldn't believe it. So you said you really liked that Budweiser that you took.
Yeah.
The first like beers that I had were bitch beers. They were
Natural Light.
Smirnoff Ice.
Where Mike's Hard lemonade.
Like Mike's Hard and stuff
so
like that. I remember being at parties being like, yeah, pass me a beer. And it's like, that's not a beer. That's
the peach schnapps.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, well, it's the same percentage of as a beer, so we would call them beers.
I remember Brennan used to drink Mike's Hard lemonade with his buddies. Like, they used to hide them down.
Dude, those like grape Smirnoff Ices and stuff. Yeah. Like, so gross. Oh, and that shit leads to the worst hangovers too.
Oh,
that sugary.
The worst. That's why I couldn't drink wine. Because it was the worst drunk and the worst
wine.
Hangovers.
Oh, I love wine.
Oh, it was the worst for me.
It is bad. So we're going to get to what we dislike.
Okay.
So we're talking right now about one of my favorite things about alcohol, which is variety. I love how many different forms it comes in. That there's a drink for every season.
Yeah.
There's a drink for every occasion. So I looked forward.
Cute drinks, fun drinks,
tiki bars.
Tiki bars.
Let's go to a tiki bar and
martinis,
get martinis.
Whiskey bars.
There's martini bars that are just martini bars.
I was all about that.
Go to the Red Door, get
I didn't care what it looked like.
Uh-huh.
I didn't care what it tasted like.
Uh-huh.
As long as it had alcohol in it, I was drinking it.
Yeah, I liked whatever it was. I heard a guy at meetings say, I drank what you got, which means it's such an old-timer thing to say. Some old guy, I used to drink what you got, which meant
people would say, what do you want? I'd say, what you got? such an old.
Those old guys.
Those old guys with their jokes they've been telling for 30 years. Yeah,
30 years. Same joke.
So funny.
Four meetings a day.
But it's true.
Yeah.
I drank whatever people had, but yeah. I did like, I looked forward every year to pumpkin beer. People would hate on pumpkin beer.
Oh.
But I liked it because it was seasonal and it was once a year.
Yeah.
And that Black O'Lantern from Wasatch that was like 9%.
Oh, 9%. And,
fuck me up with some High Point beer.
I got into the Hops Rising, the Squatters.
Oh my God, the Hops Rising, the double IPA.
The double IPA. So I would drink those. After one of those, I was you were drunk because it was 9%.
You were on your way.
I wasn't drunk. Okay.
You had built a nice base.
Yeah. So
whereas the store 3.2, you needed 3 or 4 to be on a base.
Oh, I needed a 6-pack.
Yeah.
Like that.
You have one.
I have one. I'm filling a base.
You got a base.
Yeah.
You got a.
And I drink. I remember. I would drink an entire 6-pack. In one night.
Me too. And that shit would fuck you up.
Those
a six pack
were,
of.
And then, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's when would have got really bad during the end of my binging. Because I lived around the corner from the liquor store in Holiday.
You know what was dope though about those beers, those Squatters beers, is it was some because so you had to go to the liquor store to get those High Point beers, which apparently now they sell 5% beer in stores in Utah. Right. They've changed the law, which I'm like, God damn it.
Like, I thought about that the other day when I was at the store.
Yeah.
Like I walked by the aisle and I was like, oh, all right.
It's now.
Higher percentage now.
Fuck you guys.
And that'd be great if the liquor store was closed on Sunday.
Yeah.
Because like, then you could just go to the fucking.
But that's what I was going to say is you could buy those from Squatters in bulk on Sundays. So there were all these loopholes that I knew about.
So,
where if it was Sunday, I would go and get a 6-pack of Devastators.
Oh,
remember Devastators?
My God, dude.
It's Devastator. Called Devastator. And
so also, Porcupine sells those growlers.
Uh-huh.
So I'd go to Porcupine and get the. So I would do at Porcupine, they've got the Hefeweizen, the Peach Hef, and then the Golden Spike. And I'd mix those two together. And it was so good.
Adam taught me about mixing beer.
Yeah.
I'd never mixed beer before. And then Adam, we were at a jazz game, and he was like, he ordered two beers mixed together from the tap. And I was like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
and he goes, you don't mix your beers?
Yeah.
And I was like, no.
Chasing Tail. It was a Chasing Tail and the Apricot Hefeweizen. They called it Chasing Ape.
Yeah.
And it was delicious.
I still never did quite take – I never became like a beer mixer. Mm-hmm. But I did like getting two 6-packs of two different things and kind of swapping off through the night.
Yeah. I wasn't – that was the only time I mixed.
People who didn't like the taste of beer, I never met a beer. So my first time drinking beer, I thought, this is disgusting. It took about a week before I started liking it. And then I – just fell in love with beer. So that goes back to the variety. There's so many different kinds of beer, so many I love, you know, microbrews and then the percentages and at the first half, I didn't really care so much what the percentage of a beer was. I just liked the different kinds. But I'd say the last 5 or 6 years, I was always looking for something higher than 7%.
Yeah.
Like I didn't really see the point of drinking a 5% beer or a 6% beer. I needed it to at least be. So, oh my God, so there was, have you ever
12%.
Had a, have you ever had a, I'm trying to remember the name of it. There's one called Delirium Tremens. That's this.
What?
Delirium.
That's the name of the beer?
Delirium, that's like a 12%. But then there was a 13% beer that they had at Beer Bar and at Twilight. And I would start off my nights with this 13% double IPA and a shot. And that was like
– that would just get you there already.
Yeah, that was the base. And then I could basically drink like tall boys for the rest of the night because I had started my night with that 13% and shot. And I would maybe have a couple more shots. But that was like an easy way for me to have a quote-unquote light night of drinking is if I started off with something like – that was going to
– yeah, then pace yourself.
And then I can now just have some tall boys for, you know, like 3 or 4 tall boys. And that to me is a light night. Which again, it's like I'm realizing a lot of my friends don't really even look at the percentage on the bottle.
Right.
Like, they'll just order a beer.
Yeah.
And I'll be like, what percent is that? And
they're like, I would ask, so if we went out to Squatters or Red Rock or in these places that I know they're selling these beers that, like, I would, that's the first question I would ask. Like I would be out, I'd be what like, okay, what are your high points? And, yeah. and you know, they would know, like they, uh-huh. They would tell me.
Like, or you could look on the menu, like at a place like the Bayou, they have that crazy beer menu.
Oh, the Bayou,
that
dude.
Crazy, holy, but then it has the percentages next to it.
Right.
And usually the higher percentage beers are more expensive.
Yeah, those German beers uh-huh. or those.
But
those,
I'd always be looking for something.
Yellow L's, those Hightail beers.
8 or higher.
Anything that was hoppy, mm-hmm. I was going to have it.
Love it.
Like, and
love
it. It gave me like... Oh man, the Bayou. I remember I had a Tinder date once at the Bayou and I would usually drink before I go on any date.
Yep.
Like before I left, I'd have one or two of those hops. I had those hops rising in my fridge at all time.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would get the 12 packs at the liquor store.
Yeah.
I showed up so drunk to a date and as soon as I sat down, she could obviously smell me, dude. And she was like, are you drunk right now? And I was like trying to, you know, like play it off. And here I am ordering like more alcohol for the table. And I was just, she got up and left. Like she just fucking just got up and left. And I was just, and I wasn't going to waste the alcohol. Like I ordered her a drink and me a drink. I'm like, I'm just going to stay here. Like, and I end up meeting like all these people showing up and everything. Like that was.
So I work in the service industry and people all the time.
Leave a
glass
to an alcoholic. That's insane to me.
That like you're as much as is in my glass of water right now.
You're not going to leave that.
I see it all the time. And it's only in sobriety that I've noticed this stuff. And I've realized, and also I mean, even when, before I stopped drinking, working in restaurants, I realized, oh, there are people who come to the restaurant and order a glass of wine with dinner and
just one glass.
And I go back up to their table when the glass of wine is empty and I say, hey, or when it's close to empty, hey, can I get you another glass of wine? And they go, no, I think I'm good. And I'm sitting there going, are you going somewhere after this? Or you've got wine at home. You're going to like fit like, but it's like, no, there really are people
who
just want to have, which to me, I don't see the point. I can't even imagine what the point of having a glass of wine with my dinner and then going home and that's all I have that night.
Right.
I don't even – and so I've had friends ask me, and I'm sure you've had people say this, so is it permanent? Like are you done? Are you like for real? You're never going to drink again? And you know the answer is of course like, well, that's the plan, but I'm taking it.
Try.
Yeah. But also I'm like, look, until this changes, until I can honestly say that I have a desire to just have one beer – I don't think my plans are going to change, but I know even at 18 months that I still, and I'm not an alcoholic who is through with cravings. I still get cravings at certain times of year and on vacations and in certain situations, but I still know that I have zero desire to have one drink. I only have desire for 10 and don't see the point. And I never have the thought, it would be nice to just have a single glass of wine.
I see, yeah, and I'm the same way, and I don't think I have another sobriety in me. That's the scary part for me.
Recovery.
I don't have another recovery.
I got another relapse for sure.
I have another relapse. Uh-huh, yeah, that's for sure.
Mm.
I don't another detox. Mm. I detoxed several times on my own. In my fucking shower for a week for a couple weeks, dude, and that was the worst feeling, the worst pain, physically and mentally that I've ever done, and I don't know if I have another go of that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think I would probably just drink myself to death.
Definitely. We're going to come back to that, and that's going to be in our list of things we don't like.
Yes,
So we talk variety. There's a thing about the culture of alcohol. You know that – have you ever seen that episode of South Park where Stan's trying to tell Randy that he's an alcoholic and he keeps going – he's like, well, you're drinking wine right now. And he goes, this is called a tasting and it's really classy. And he's got several wine glasses in front of him.
I haven't seen that one. Well,
these are called a flight of beers. It's a beer flight.
The culture of
it's
wine
classy.
Is so fucking pretentious.
And I to this day, I really believe that everyone's full of shit. Everyone's
completely.
It's absolutely full of shit.
They're just going to get plowed.
I work in the restaurant industry, and they always do wine classes. They always have sommeliers come in to teach the servers about the different kinds of wine. And to this day, I just, if any of my managers are listening, sorry, this is the truth. I just lie. I just lie. And especially now that I'm sober, I can't participate in the actual tasting. I ask my coworkers, what does that one taste like? But then I just get a general, like a couple adjectives for each one.
Right.
And then, but also if a customer asks me, is this really acidic? If I can tell that they want it to be acidic, you say yes. And if I can tell that they don't want it to be, I say no. And if they're like, "If is this really
does
acidic?
This, does this have like some like fruity, or if they go, tarty?
Is this really sweet? Like that?" Yeah. I go, "Oh no, it's not sweet at all. It's really
is this a red or a white? Yeah. Like that's that was my extent of like wine knowledge.
Because like they don't know either. Don't know. What if I tell you that this is really oaky and I bring it to you and I go, "Can you taste that oak and that butter? You're gonna go, "Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh
yeah,
oak.
I get that. The hints of the
like whiskey. You could tell. Like, you could tell a little bit.
I can even tell the difference between one wine and another. Like, if you can go, here's this one and here's this, you know, here's this Sauvignon Blanc and here's this Chardonnay. I can tell that they're different bottles of wine.
Right.
But when it comes
it's like
to
Pepsi and Coke.
Yeah. But when it comes to which one is fancier, I'm like, I don't think I'm going to.
Yeah.
I don't think. Whereas with liquor, there are cleaner brands where you're like, I get a much cleaner buzz off of this.
Yeah.
I get cleaner day after.
Oh, way cleaner.
And there's all this history with alcohol since it's been the DOC of humanity for so many years, for centuries. We have all this history of these different techniques that have come about in crafting. They're just right, where the grapes are just the right age, and or where the hops are. Like we found out this old family recipe, which is why I think it's always funny that people shit on domestic beers, because I'm like, it's all just different recipes.
Yeah, and it's all alcohol. Uh-huh. Like it's all going to get you the same.
Yeah.
I mean, one might be cleaner than the other, and your buzz might last a little longer, but I never got into wine. Those were the worst nights of my life.
See,
I'm thinking about when I drank wine.
Oh, I definitely have had some really bad wine hangovers for sure. But it's just one of those things where it goes back to why I like the variety, where it's like, I can just be in a different mood. I can be in a mood where I'm like, I've drank Crown Royal every night for the last six nights, seven nights.
Yeah.
I need a break from Crown Royal. I'm just going to drink wine tonight.
Yeah.
That's another funny thing that the alcoholics do is like, I'm just going to change the thing I'm drinking for a bit.
Yeah.
And that'll give me a a fresh, like I'm going to drink rum drinks for a while.
Rum drinks. Yeah. I went through this. So when I first started drinking, I drank that Pinnacle Whipped vodka stuff.
Oh, fuck.
And so I would mix it with orange juice. It was like an orange Julius in a cup.
It was candy.
And it was candy. That's that's the first time I started drinking.
Have you ever put that in pumpkin beer?
And no.
It sounds
delightful.
It was my favorite fall cocktail was pumpkin beer with Pinnacle Whipped vodka.
Oh my God. So
I tell people that and they're like, gross.
Man, that shit used to fuck me up. Oh my God. So when I got when I first started drinking, that girl I dated, she loved wine. Mm-hmm. And I tried to get into it and I just couldn't do it. Like I hated the taste. I hated the buzz. I hated the drunk. It made me so emotional.
Yeah.
That's another thing. There was different types of alcohol that took me to different levels, right?
Sure.
Beer was I could usually stay pretty even keeled.
Yeah.
But I got
really dehydrated.
Yeah, I did get dehydrated too. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And felt bloated.
Yeah. And way bloated.
Yeah.
And then when I first started drinking, like I noticed that got me drunk really fast. Cause it was like what was the proof on that, dude? It was the Pinnacle Whipped was crazy. Like that shit was.
That's
just
the other crazy
so
thing is the
so
just these the different proofs and the different.
It was
you know,
like 40 proof or something like that, and like I would drink like maybe I mean this glass is what is this? I don't even know. Four ounces. I would fill a cup like this.
Uh huh. That's probably a 12-ounce glass.
I would fill like maybe this much of OJ.
Uh huh.
And then the rest would just be Pinnacle Whipped vodka.
Yeah. Yeah. You talked about we're gonna get back to that with the bad stuff, but. How about this? So you talked about drinking before dates. I always did that. That's another thing I like. Now, it could go bad. I definitely had dates where I got too drunk and the girl left early and I'm sitting there thinking like, what happened? Because it's also funny too when you're drunk and people don't want to be around you that you don't realize.
Yeah, you're just kind of like,
what the fuck? What's her problem? I have friends all the time. I have friends who are of my friends that I think they need to take a look at their drinking who get thrown out of bars a lot.
Right.
And they'll tell me the story and I'll go, okay. And they'll go, but I wasn't drunk. I mean, I was, but like, I really wasn't.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you get thrown out of the bar, I promise you.
They don't throw normal people out of the bars. They don't just throw.
I promise. I know you think you weren't doing anything. I know you think that you were just talking to your friends and just having a good time. Chances are you were probably spilling drinks on people next to you. You were probably bumping into people. You were probably like doing really wide arm motions. And you know.
I got thrown out of No Name Saloon up in Park City.
Mm-hmm.
That place, like if you get thrown out of that place, and those are the nights that I got blackout drunk and I woke up on a random couch mm-hmm. in a condo on Main Street in Park City with my pants off.
See, I was actually pretty good at not getting thrown out of places and not getting.
I was too. That was the only time that I can remember that that someone was there was like, dude, you got thrown out. Like you were so drunk they told you to leave.
Well, it was really important to me to not get caught. Was the thing.
Yeah.
So it shows me that I always sort of secretly knew that I had a problem that other people didn't have because I was always pre-gaming and I was always planning on drinking after my friends left too.
Correct.
And then I was always convincing them to get drunker than they normally would.
See, I didn't, because that wasn't my thing. I didn't try to convince people to drink more.
I had a lot of friends
I would dip. Like I would I get an Uber and I would, cause I couldn't drive cause I already had a DUI.
Mm-hmm.
I would get an Uber.
Well, that's smart of you to, I kept driving afterwards.
Yeah. Well, I did too.
Yeah.
I got a second DUI.
Yeah.
And so that's when I started Ubering everywhere cause I had an interlock in my car.
Yeah.
So I couldn't, even if I went somewhere, I was going
to
drink.
Yeah, it's funny that we need the interlock to prevent us.
Yeah. They fucking know
my parents
that.
Asked me on the last night I drank, my last drunk, I told them about what happened and I drove home from this bar after having like 16 drinks. Like the amount I drank was insane and I couldn't even see straight on the freeway. And the next day I just broke down to my parents, told them what happened and they were like, why did you do that? And I was like, because I'm a fuck up. Like, cause I'm an alcoholic. Like I wouldn't make that choice.
Right.
But that's the reality of what I was going through is I cannot make safe decisions.
No,
when I'm drunk.
You can't.
And
you cannot.
You know,
no.
But going back to this thing of, I did enjoy when it didn't go south, the courage and the freedom.
Yes.
I don't know how I got so nervous before dates.
Did you?
And I'm so lucky. I'm so happy. One of my favorite things about being in a relationship right now is that I don't have to date anymore because it gives me so much anxiety.
Yeah.
And,
I've been dating off and on for 10 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
Like it doesn't even like I went on a brunch date today with a girl.
Are you pretty used to it?
I'm so used to it now. Mm-hmm. But I did notice since I haven't had many – I haven't dated much in this 10 months since I've been sober.
Mm-hmm.
I recently went out with this girl and I sort of liked her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a party. I had a Christmas party at my house where I invited all my friends and I told them they could bring liquor. Mm-hmm. I said, I don't have any alcohol in my house. I don't have any drugs in my house. So if you want to do mm-hmm. that at this Christmas party, ugly sweater, karaoke, you're going to have to bring it over.
Mm-hmm.
But I – normally, I'm a pretty outgoing, like, you know, confident guy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I haven't really ever been super intimidated by approaching women. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time that I've been sober and tried to date and go out. And I noticed that I was getting nervous. Like this girl came over and we hung out 3 or 4 or 5 times and I still hadn't kissed her yet. Which was like, you know, first or second date, like I would be like, what's up? You want to make out?
My girlfriend and I kissed on like our third or fourth time. So we were hanging out as friends and then I made it known to her that I wanted to pursue a relationship. And then we hung out like 3 more times as people who had agreed that that was something we thought was interesting.
Right.
But we just were sort of like flirting and this is, so I started dating her about a week into my sobriety, which
Don't do that. I highly suggest wait a while.
Don't do that. But
a year or
but
more.
It was such a different experience because I had all this anxiety.
Yeah.
And I didn't have the guts to when I would go on dates when I would drink. I had now again consent was always a big thing for me. And I actually thought that consent was, I found all these like really, I thought kind of sexy ways to get consent. But I would just be like, I would just say like what you said. I would just, sometimes I would just go like, so you want to make out? Like it would be that, like we'd be like outside a bar or something, or we'd be talking and like, I'd just be like, so should we make out? And like,
stuff like that.
But it'd be kind of in that way where they can go, I don't think so. And that's a totally reasonable answer.
Right.
You can totally say no. But then a lot of times they'd be like, yeah, let's make out.
Yeah, because they were drunk too. And they were going out to either have this hookup culture, mm-hmm. this internet app dating culture makes mm-hmm. it so easy.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you were on apps, like mm-hmm. when I was drinking, like I would full on invite women over to my condo, mm-hmm. my house, like straight up. Like mm-hmm. I'd be drinking and I'd be on the apps and I'd match with some girl. I'd be like, yeah, what are you doing tonight? You want to come over?
You know, the way I got into the program is doing that.
Yeah.
I texted this girl and I said, hey, I got a bottle of wine. I could come over to your apartment. We could just shoot, like hang out. Cause she said my roommates are out of town. And I was like, well, let me come over. Let's drink this bottle of wine. Right. And she wrote back, I'm sober. I don't drink. And I don't know if you were the same way, but every time I met a sober person was like, how'd you do it?
Yeah. I wanted to know too.
And so, because I felt like I had tried so many times, I was Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where I'd wake up and be like, that's it. I'm done. Fuck this shit. I'm done. That's it. And then I'd look myself in the mirror and I'd go, no more.
Yeah,
that's the last time. And I would be drunk by 5 o'clock.
Oh, easy. I'd be out. I'd go to the liquor store. Like, uh-huh. I can't even tell you.
But so this girl says, you know, and I was drunk while I was texting this girl.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're sober? Oh my God, that's so amazing. How'd you do it? And she goes, are you really interested? And I said, I really am. I've been trying so hard. And she goes, she texts me an address. She goes, go here tomorrow night, 7 p.m.
Oh, and no, she, wait, she didn't say it was an AA meeting?
Didn't say it was an AA meeting.
Wow.
Totally duped me.
Dude, she 12-stepped the fuck out of you, bro.
Oh, she 12-stepped the fuck out of me.
The fuck?
And so I go to the meeting. As soon as I walk in, I see the 12 and 12 on the wall, and I'm like, oh, shit.
Have you been to meetings before?
Never been to a meeting before.
So it was my
first meeting, and I had wanted to find some kind of group that what I really
How long
didn't,
ago was this?
This was probably 2 years ago.
Okay.
Took me a while to get the hang of it.
Right.
But I wanted something that didn't have to do with God.
Was this in LA?
This was in New York.
Oh, it was in New York. Okay.
Yeah. And I wanted something that I could meet with people and get sober, but I didn't want to have to deal with God or any bullshit like that.
Right.
Because people who had to rely on God were idiots and were, you know, like they didn't.
Yeah, they think for themselves.
They couldn't think for themselves. Yeah. And like they were small-minded. And,
right.
And I told everyone that on my first meeting. I told all these guys they wanted to go to the diner around the corner in fellowship. I was bawling my eyes out. And they were like, come get a milkshake with us and hang out with us.
I bawled my first meeting too.
I was bawling my eyes out.
Yeah.
But they were like, anyway, they told me really quickly, you know, like, don't worry about the God stuff. Just come back here tomorrow. Take my phone number. And anyway, long story short is I finally met this girl that I'd been texting and we went to a meeting together. And I remember still thinking like, well, we're on a date. We went to lunch before and then we went to the meeting. And then afterward, I was like, so like, should we go out again? And she was like, oh, no, we're not going to date. And I was like, oh really? And she was like, yeah, no. You should do this.
Yeah, this
like,
is, you should work on this.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. But and then it took me like 6 months to get the hang of it. And then this current streak of sobriety started about a week before my girlfriend and I started dating. But yeah, everything changed because I had so much anxiety. Even our first kiss, I was so nervous, and it was like our first real date, and we had a really nice night, and it was so different. I wasn't suave at all.
Right.
I didn't know.
Right.
I was so worried, and alcohol did help grease those wheels. Now, obviously, there's the downside of I had plenty of nights where I woke up in someone's bed, and I had no idea how we got there, and that's very scary.
Yeah.
To go.
Yep.
And I have to text that person and like, cause I would kind of, sometimes I would dip, like sometimes I would bounce and get a cab home and then I'd text them, hey, are you okay? Was everything that happened last night cool?
Yeah.
Cause I don't remember what we did. And that's, but it's like, I did have plenty of dates too, where I felt like the date was made a lot easier.
Exactly.
With the help of, we hit up a couple bars and it really just helped me get loose.
Yeah.
And
so I haven't dated without this drinking culture.
Right.
Like, and you know, every date was like, hey, let's go get, like, I wouldn't even like match or go out with somebody if they were sober,
mm-hmm.
or if they didn't say that they were, you know, I'd say, hey, you want to go get a drink, or a match with Mormon girls, especially here in the Salt Lake area.
Wouldn't even bother. Yeah, they would said LDS. Yeah.
Oh, you
like,
wouldn't even bother. Wouldn't even think about it.
Yeah.
Like super, that was a mega swipe left.
Mm-hmm.
And so
have you ever heard when Chris D'Elia does this, like when he drinks iced coffee and he goes,
yeah,
so disrespectful.
So disrespectful. So disrespectful.
I've been doing that this whole episode. And I'm like, I always think you can hear it sometimes in my other.
I hope Chris listens to this and knows what big fangirls we are.
I would love it if Chris D'Elia just somehow stumbled because of like a tag or something. You know, I'm going to tag the fuck out of him in this episode.
You're going to see this, Chris.
I'm going to tag Log Cabin. I'm going to tag. anyway, sorry. Keep going.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't know what it was, but like it was just a, like every single, like I had to go get drinks. Like we had to go get drinks, and I went, my regular spot was,
could not imagine going on a blind date without at least a couple cocktails.
Yeah.
Without and at least was, getting wine at dinner.
Like, and it got to the point where like it was, I would just start inviting women over to my house.
Mm-hmm.
And like it was just a numbers game at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was like, how many women will agree? Because I was already drunk.
Well, there's this
enough.
People that put 420 friendly on their profile.
Yeah. So I was smoking weed.
And there are girls that literally just go, I'm down if you just want to come over and smoke weed and fuck.
Yeah.
Like,
and
straight
that,
up.
And that's basically what would happen.
Yep.
Like, and I can't even, I had some girl ask me the other day. She's like, how many sexual partners do you think you've had? And I literally said, I have no idea. And that's not because I didn't have a lot of sex. Because, you know, growing up, you know, I was LDS. I think I lost my virginity when I was after my mission. So I was, what, 21 or 22?
Yeah.
And then I got married.
Was your wife.
Yeah, I got married at 25. We weren't having a lot of sex. That's part of the reason why we got divorced. Yeah. But it was something that was so attractive about that first girl that I started drinking with is I discovered this weed, alcohol, and sex mixed together was like this euphoria, orgasmic.
Everything I've ever wanted.
Like I was, my mind was, the relationship was so toxic.
Mm-hmm.
It was so wrong that I did it for a year because it was so fucking wrong.
Uh-huh.
And it was just was so exciting
that
this Mormon kid like opened up this avenue of debauchery that I'd always seen in movies. And I was like, oh my God, I'm doing it.
I'm doing the walk of shame.
I'm doing it all.
I'm
cheating on this girl. This girl's married and we're having an affair. Like everybody knew about it. And they're like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, I love it. Like, screw you guys.
Oh, I was having a lot of fun seeing multiple people at once. I had a lot of fun. And I would let them know. They would know that they were not the only person I was seeing. But I was having a lot of fun just like having these different flavors of the week, like, oh, tonight is so and so, and you know, like it.
I didn't get into serious relationships,
I had so much fun in New York. Is when I really got like I was single for 3 years, and I just was out there drinking and slinging,
That'd be a really great name for a band:
drinking and slinging.
Drinking and slinging.
Drinking and slinging.
Oh my God!
So gross.
I didn't. I got divorced. You know, I was 29, and I got into a relationship with that girl for a year.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only serious relationship I had in the last 8 or 9 years. Because I was just so enamored with this single bachelor. I even created a social media account persona called The Bachelor's Life. It was basically this like online dating experiment where I would see how much shit I could get away with, just the crazy shit that I would say, like just profiles that I would post. It was hilarious. Like it was some really good shit, but it was so awful. Like it turned me into like this awful drunk asshole human being that like any normal woman with any smidge of like reality or dignity would like see right through me. Mm-hmm. Like, I meet some really awesome women, and within, you know, a day or two of just interacting with me would be like, oh dude, you're a fucking asshole. Like, yeah. And I blocked. Mm-hmm. Like that was the type of like shit I was attracting. Mm-hmm. Not only because of the alcohol, but just because of the pervasive culture. So it was awful.
Okay, so I think in this list we've already done the bad and the good. Okay. We've probably listed more bad than good. Yeah. Because, well, I mean, that's our experience, but so I think that, I mean, if I just go down the list, it's like hangovers, poor decision making, can't get enough of it. And then there's like the health stuff that I just kind of always kind of pushed off down the road, like liver and heart disease and stuff.
Right, right,
but I'm
right.
like, I, you know, like,
right.
I mean, geez, and the amount of ibuprofen I was going through while I was drinking.
I still do a lot of ibuprofen.
I don't take nearly as much ibuprofen as I was when I was drinking. Yeah. I basically took ibuprofen every single day when I was drinking because I always had a hangover.
Always had a headache.
And always had a headache. And now I take ibuprofen like once a week because I get headaches still if I don't drink enough water. But right. But mixing that, like ibuprofen's already bad for your liver. Oh, and then mixing so that bad. With like the head. And I just would kind of think, yeah, but I'm young, so I'm going to have to stop at some point.
So I started developing this gastric, this throat. I don't even know what it was called. It felt like heartburn, but I couldn't clear food.
I had that. I had that exact same thing. Couldn't swallow.
Couldn't swallow. It was the most embarrassing thing. Mm-hmm. One of the most embarrassing moments I ever had.
And guess what? It's completely gone.
Yeah, gone. It's gone. It was all alcohol induced. I made so many excuses for it.
Yep. I was eating too many acidic foods. The time of night I was eating.
Ibuprofen.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I was up at the River Horse in Park City. Yeah. So I hung out a lot of friends up in that Park City crowd up there. Mm-hmm. It's just a smorgasbord of alcohol and partying and all that stuff. So we were at Savor the Summit, which is all the cool fancy restaurants, line Main Street, outside in the summer, and everybody gets together and they have, you know, 4-course meals, and it's like, you know, $1,000 a plate. And I was with my friends up there, and I was eating lobster. It was a steak and lobster dinner, like just wonderful food. And of course, I had so much alcohol. I threw up at the table. I couldn't clear the food. Like, I couldn't clear this lobster and the steak. And I literally threw up all over the table. All over. Everyone was wearing fancy shit. It got so bad that I went to the doctor and, you know, had a scope. I had several scopes done. And, I mean, they all said the same thing. They're like, how much alcohol are you drinking? And I was like,
always lying to doctors.
I have a couple beers, you know.
I lied to the doctors.
And he's like, this is not a couple beers, dude. Like if you keep doing this, like you will, like your throat's gonna collapse, and you're going to like not be able to swallow. Like sometimes I couldn't even clear water.
Dude, I puked. Yeah, water. And I thought water would help me.
What made it worse was I was puking all the time. Mm-hmm. Right, it got to a point where I felt like I almost had an eating disorder because I would go out and eat so much, and then I would try to eat the food, and I'd be like, I'm gonna get a better buzz if I don't have any food in my system, so I'm gonna throw up. So I could keep drinking.
So the way that I would convince myself I wasn't a smoker, because I smoked a lot when I was drinking too, and the way
smoked
that I would
weed or cigarettes. Oh, I never had a cigarette.
You really missed out. Cigarettes and alcohol are a match made in heaven. So nicotine and alcohol are
cigarettes.
They are the grossest thing in the world.
So
I'm so happy I was never a sober smoker. So even like the next day when my friends would go out hungover and smoke a cigarette, I was like, that sounds awful right now. Like that, like the smell of smoke would make me nauseous the day after a heavy night of drinking. But I would smoke half a pack when I was out out at the bars. Oh my God, I loved it. It was so nice. There's this – nicotine's kind of like an upper. It's kind of like a – like so the mixture of getting that head high and that like rush,
okay.
It's like
– okay.
It's kind of like why people mix cocaine and alcohol. It's like that upper-downer mix where you're going to get something that's going to give you a second wind so you can keep drinking, which is why – so many alcoholics love mixing blow with their, which is another thing where like.
Did you ever get into that?
So I take so, I already have, I have such a naturally high body energy. Can you tell?
So do I.
Anytime I would take uppers, anytime I would take MDMA or anything like that, it was so intense.
Yeah.
Whereas my, my friends would just be like, I'm having a fun night. And I would be like bouncing off the walls and
grinding your teeth,
and just talking everyone's ear off who would listen and knowing that they're annoyed. I'd see the look on their face but I can't shut up. I just can't stop talking. And then
I was lucky that I only did it a handful of times.
And cocaine, I knew, every time I did it, it was like I was having fun for 10 minutes. Yep. And then after that, all I wanted was more cocaine.
Exactly.
And I wasn't even having fun. I was just like, just we got to go find the guy who had the cocaine because I am too energetic right now and I just need to feel good again. And so I never really, it never took for me, but my friends who did do a lot of cocaine, it was just kind of like a, they were drunk and it just sort of brought, it just sort of was like a nudge up. It was just like, this is going to nudge me up so I can keep drinking.
We're just, our brain chemistry is just wired differently.
But
dude.
I already, I could go the whole night drinking without any coke and just be drinking and smoking. And I could keep up with my friends who were doing blow and be like, yeah, you guys need the blow to keep, to stay awake and keep partying.
Yeah, the culture. I think, when you were in New York and LA, I think drugs are way more, they were way more accessible. At least everyone, when I spent time there, like everybody, the culture is just like, that's just what
they're just married.
Around.
They're very married.
Yeah. So, I mean, here, like, it was a special night. Like you had to go like to Park City or like during Sundance or like I had to know somebody.
Yeah.
Like the handful of times that I did coke, like I remember how miserable I was after.
Yeah.
Like just my, my teeth hurt and my head, was just pounding because I would drink so much too. Right. And then it was that, it was like, how much more can I do? Cause I'm so drunk that I couldn't feel anything anyway. So I was like, I'm just going to keep going.
Right.
You know, it was just,
and
oh,
that's,
man.
I've had people ask me before, what does cocaine feel like? And I'll say, it feels like wanting more cocaine.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. That's the same thing I would say too. It's like, that's what cocaine feels like. I mean, I have a lot of energy now, but it was like, it took it to another level. It just, it wasn't, the one time I did mushrooms was like that too. In high school. Worst experience of my life.
Yeah, I've had bad experiences there too. I wanted to tell a puking story that was similar to your throwing up at that party. I was in a phase where I was like, quote unquote, not smoking. But what I was would do is bum cigarettes from people at the bar. And that meant like, as long as I'm not buying cigarettes, I'm not smoking.
Okay. Right.
But there were certain brands that I needed to smoke because I couldn't smoke other brands. And I bummed a cigarette from my friend at Twilight Lounge. And I took one drag and shocked myself and everyone around when I just threw up all over her. Just one dragon just went, and she was sitting on a bench below me. I threw up on her head because she was sitting below me on a bench. And both of us just kind of sat there in a stunned silence for about 10 seconds while I went, no, oh no, oh no. And she just kind of looked at her hands and looked up at me, just kind of mouth agape, shocked. And I just went,
was she
some random
woman?
No, she was a friend of mine.
Oh, friend. Okay.
And I just, and I started going, I'm so sorry. And she just stood up and went, I'm going to go home. And I was like, no, no. I took my beanie off and I'm like rubbing her off with my beanie. I'm like swipe, you know, trying to, and I just was like, I don't know how that happened. I don't, cause I, and it was one of those things where I was like telling everyone around, I'm like, I'm not that drunk. I'm really not that drunk. Like it was just a cigarette, but it's like, I was really fucked up. It was, you know,
God.
I think I had those kind of things where I just embarrassed myself so many times. That's another, that was another thing that was so hard. The day after embarrassment, you remember the pain, the depression and anxiety of waking up the next day and feeling like, what the hell did I do last night?
Yeah, so I wasn't going out much. If I did, I would dip and then I would go home. And I would drink myself to oblivion.
Would you get online or anything?
Oh yeah. So my phone, goddamn, dude, I can't even tell you, like, if I went through the history of like how many numbers I had or didn't have and like just the insane shit that I would text and like post online, like I'm a pretty open guy. Like if you follow me on Facebook, like it's like a, you know, it's like a running a stand-up comedy set that I want to say, but I you know, I don't have a stage, so it's like, oh yeah, this is funny. But it was another level. Like it was like I'd have people that would be like, would call me the next day and be like, dude, are you okay? Like,
I was always really careful not to make it too public, but I would do stuff like I would like send Snapchats to my friends or like send send like my good friends dick pics and stuff. I would like, you know.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of dick pics. I definitely can't run for office. Yeah. But like maybe I could. Like fuck, I don't think it gives a shit anymore.
I was always very cognizant again of like not getting caught. So like I didn't want anyone thinking, do you have a problem?
Yeah.
But I did, there were so many things that would happen. Like I would think it was funny to send Snapchats to my friends. Cause I would just be, there's like the sober version of me behind the cloud of the drunk who's thinking it's funny that like, right. I can't talk right now.
Yeah. And it's so annoying to sober people.
Oh, so
it's so annoying.
I remember I would go to the deli around the corner from my house cause they were open 24/7 in when I lived in New York, and I would go there at 3 a.m. and I would, and these guys would like sell me food.
Yeah.
But I would be like, just say bacon, egg, and cheese. And I'd be like, bacon, egg, and cheese. Oh my God, and I'm like, dude. Behind the, like, yeah. They're sober me back there, like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
Say the words. And I'm like,
oh my gosh.
I need a bacon, egg, and cheese.
Oh my gosh.
And I'm like, standing up, leaning on like this rack of chips behind
me. It was just exhausting.
Oh, jeez.
Like the rigmarole that, the just the pain that I put my body through, like when it got bad, like near the end of my drinking, I started binging.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would go, four or five days straight.
Yeah.
Of just drinking alcohol,
mm-hmm.
No food, and I took myself to the hospital, probably 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I dated a really cool girl and I was drinking so much during that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the catalyst to me of like,
yeah, okay. My last serious relationship before the one I'm in now was so drunk. And
I was so drunk.
And every fight was drunk.
Every fight.
Every single fight was, it was easy to get over because you'd wake up the next day and you'd look at each other and go, sorry about that. Can we just? Yeah.
But she was a normal drinker. Like she could.
Oh, my
she
ex
could,
wasn't.
She could take it or leave it.
Yeah.
But
the thing about being sober too and dealing with issues in my relationship is we actually have to deal with them because right. there's none of this like, sorry, I don't even know what I said last night and I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
And like I love you.
I was drunk
and like I'm so sorry about that.
Yeah.
I actually have to go. Okay.
We have to communicate our feelings.
There's a real issue here. There's a real miscommunication that's happening here. But what's so nice is I have this process of I'm going to go talk to my sponsor. I'm going to go to a meeting and I'm going to get back to you. And I'm going to I'm going to try to
therapy.
Yeah, I'm going to try to come back to this with a little bit more of a
clear mind.
Clear mind and a little bit less emotion. That's a thing that's good. But so again, going down the list of things that's bad. For years, I treated my depression and anxiety with mm-hmm. with alcohol and weed.
Yep.
And weed was my first like anti-anxiety medication because I used to have panic attacks. And then I stopped smoking weed every day when it felt like it wasn't really fulfilling its medicinal use anymore.
Right.
But my drinking went up a whole bunch. And it's so insane that I was having – near the end, I was having daily panic attacks or at least 3 or 4 panic attacks a week.
Wow.
And they were debilitating. They were – you know, I couldn't show up for work or I couldn't – like I'd have to call work and be like, I can't come in because I can't breathe and I can't – like I can't leave my house. And the hopelessness of being like, I don't know how to stop these panic attacks, but then constantly doing – and then it was really like the only way that I could get any relief – on a day-to-day basis was to start drinking again.
You said the magic word.
And then I'd get better and then it would pick right back up where I left off the next day when I woke up. My anxiety would be waiting for me.
See, I didn't suffer from panic attacks. I didn't suffer from extreme anxiety. What mm-hmm. I suffered from was I think I had sort of a skewed view of my world.
Mm-hmm.
I suffered from not knowing who I was.
Yeah.
So whatever you want to call that, like I don't know if it was multi-personality disorder, or I think it was just the sheer shame of me not living up to what I thought the idea of my life. I had.
Yeah, I sure didn't have a good self-image. So self-esteem.
Horrible. Yeah. Yeah. So my brain never shuts off. Uh-huh. Right. So it's just constantly thinking and swimming.
Mm-hmm.
And so what weed and alcohol did is it shut it off.
Yeah. And it just gave me some peace.
Gave me a little bit of relief.
And that's another one of those positives where I'm like, that freedom from just everything gets a little quieter for once. Yeah. And there's something really difficult in sobriety with being like, I have to address my thoughts and I have to confront myself and I have to do the hard work of like gaining a healthy self-image and actually communing with my higher self and getting my ego out of the way and having that like battle.
Right. I'm still trying to figure that out. But I think for the first time in my life, I'm starting to really feel like I'm somewhat in control of my life experience. And
I at least feel like I like who I am a lot more.
Yeah. That's interesting.
I like who I am at all. I didn't really like who I was. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I still struggle with that. Like I still, like, I'm still working my steps and like, there's still a lot of shameful things that, that I've got to amend for. But yeah, for the most part, like if I meditate for 20 minutes, I'm lucky if I get 1 minute of like quiet time
of the
barely. Of me like finally like tuning into my higher self and like oh wow, there's like 1 minute of me just focusing on the fan going. Otherwise it's just like, ooh, what's going on? Well, what's going on with work? You know, what's going on with that?
I think most people know what you're talking about.
Email, Facebook, blah, 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 social media. So yeah, that's where my brain's going.
Well, and we live in a world that really doesn't do much to help us.
No, we do not.
It's very, very hard to find that quiet. So it is really nice to have this thing where it's like, I get why people, I really miss the idea of being able to get off from a long day at work and just be like, I'm just going to go home and I'm going to turn on the TV and I'm going to drink a bottle of wine and it's going to be so nice. Or I'm going to like drink like four or five glasses of whiskey and I'm just going to kind of like shut just off
Netflix
and just like, I'm not going to really like, I'm going to let my day melt away. And you can get there in sobriety, but it's hard daily diligent work. And and alcohol is a kind of more like there's an easy button for that. Yep. But the problem is it comes with all this. You're going to have to wake up the next day and deal with the ramifications of that. Now, normal drinkers really can go home and sit down with a glass of scotch and have that one glass of scotch. And it helps them just sort of get that kind of, oof, the day is.
That's just crazy to me.
It's insane.
I can't even wrap my brain around it.
Yeah. So now this leads, we've gone through our history of drinking, the goods and the bads, the ups and the downs. I want to get into now the real meat of, we've only got like 20 minutes left, but the real meat of alcohol as a social institution, as the DOC for humanity. Joe Rogan and Malcolm Gladwell were talking about this, that like, and it is insane to me. And the more I think about this idea, the more I see this. Just the ubiquitous acceptance of alcohol in society that
I mean, it was like we were talking about like just dating culture. Like it was so, I mean, we grew up in Utah, right, where alcohol is not like, it's not, the culture is very different.
Let's go get a drink.
But the people that do drink here, well, like it'd be insane not to go out.
It's weird to not have a drink on a date.
Yeah, it's just so strange.
Bizarre.
And like stepping back from it and seeing people that aren't drinking, like it's
Gladwell talked about college sports, going to a football game, and the football game is sponsored by Bud Light on a college campus that struggles with frat house binge drinking and like girls getting raped at frat parties and Bud Light sponsoring the football game.
It's
like, and underneath the giant banner of Bud Light is a little small text that says drink responsibly.
Yeah.
And it's so insane to me.
Oh, they make this. Yeah. I remember when I was a kid, like it was so attractive to me. Like, I mean, the ads we would see, like we went to college football games growing up. I mean, there wasn't a lot of beer on those campuses, but when I got to college and I saw people partying and like having fun. I mean, even the kids in high school that were drinking. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We were like, what? Like, what? This looks so like it's just insane to me the amount of money and revenue that these liquor stores are raking in, especially here in this valley.
Well, and they get a total free pass too.
Oh, total these free people, pass.
I mean, cigarettes are legal. Now we looked this up before we started recording, because I've been saying lately that it's crazy to me that we have these stigmas on especially heroin and meth. That's not, and I talked about this in the drug episode too, and I tried to be clear then that I'm not saying everyone should go do heroin and meth. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the idea that we have this notion of heroin and meth being dangerous, dirty drugs that cannot be used safely and no one should ever touch them.
There needs to be all these stipulations and regulations around it.
And they can never be legal. They should never be legalized. Right. They should never be decriminalized. But we have ubiquitous acceptance of alcohol. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying we should accept heroin addiction or meth addiction as something that people can do safely. What I'm saying is because alcohol is a social institution that's been around for centuries, because we have all these different varieties of it, because we have different percentages that you can consume it in, because we have all these different ways that we accept it. But the statistics are, and this is what I've been saying, is alcohol is the most deadly of all those three drugs that I just mentioned, heroin, meth, and alcohol.
Yep.
It kills the most people per year.
It does.
Now, I've been saying that alcohol is the most deadly drug, period. We looked it up. Tobacco is far and away.
Far, and heart disease.
And tobacco and heart disease, so overeating and having a bad diet are far and away the highest preventable causes of death on a year-to-year basis. But even these things, having a bad diet or tobacco, we've successfully created a pretty big stigma around smoking in society.
Right.
To the point where like we look down on
smokers,
lawyers for tobacco companies and people who defend tobacco, Philip Morris. And and we look down
you're part of the problem, man.
But it's really cool to have an artisan beer making company to have a homegrown, brew and put on your bottles, drink responsibly.
Right.
And I'm not saying that shouldn't be the case. I'm not saying that we should have a campaign to make these people look over their shoulders and feel bad about being drug dealers. What I'm saying is it's so bizarre to me that this one thing gets a pass, a full pass. And we definitely are aware of the dangers of alcohol. And we definitely have lots of social institutions like Alcoholics Anonymous and like all these things that are there to provide help for people who are struggling with addiction to alcohol. But also, it's just everywhere. In our media,
everywhere.
I keep seeing it everywhere I go in movies that like – it's such a classic scene to have a group of friends get drunk and dance.
So I'm rewatching Mad Men right now. So, I mean, they were getting shit-faced at work.
Getting
business drunk in a meeting, like after every big account, Don Draper and they're going into his office and like pounding, having sex with the secretaries and like watching the election in the office and passing out and throwing up.
Can you imagine if there was a scene in any show where they show them drinking on New Year's? It was a nice scene of like friends celebrating and they're all shooting smack. And
they all
have black tar heroin on tin foil and they're smoking it off of a tin.
Hey man, you ready? Here, yeah, go get your sling.
It's a nice scene. It's like people celebrating
some garden party.
Because you know those scenes in movies where like friends and there's like a song playing like it's all right to have a good time. Said it's all right. And it's all the friends and they're like drinking
some Billy
cocktails.
Joel in the background.
And it's a montage of everyone dancing. Yeah. And it's like supposed to be this nice moment of they're having a little bit of fun. They're getting maybe a little bit too drunk, but it's all good. Look at how much they love each other. Can you imagine a scene where they're snorting meth?
Right. They're shooting heroin. Yeah. Like, oh my God, dude. Yeah. Like, and I don't know what the answer is. But being an alcoholic and then like trying to stay sober now, like you said, like I think the obsession for me for that first drink is gone. But like the amount of ads and everywhere I go, every party I go to, like every ads online, we're big sports guys, so. Mm-hmm. Football,
it's everywhere.
It's all over college and pro sports. Yeah. Like it's absolutely insane. And that's the thing that was so pervasive about my drinking. Like everything was based around the alcohol. Like I can't even tell you how many jazz games or Utes games or soccer games, dude. I went so drunk and high to play soccer sometimes that like I couldn't even run straight. Like I'd be falling over. Like I would still try to go to go and play. And like,
it's that thing of I did everything drunk.
Everything. Yeah.
I, you know, and I had like levels that I could get that I knew, like I would drink at work, but I would be like, I'm going to make sure I don't get too drunk at work because I could lose my job. But I'm going to like pace myself so that by the time I get off from work, I've got a nice base going.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to.
My entire my entire life was built around alcohol.
But
vacations. Again, oh, Jesus.
So living in New York City, trying to get sober,
oh, man, I can't even
where it's
imagine
it's
that.
Such a. I mean, can you imagine if every third door on the street was a heroin bar, or was like an opium den, or was it? And you're addicted to opioids, and you're trying to get clean. And every third door is people in suits and ties who just got off work,
right?
And they're all hanging out watching the game, and they're all shooting up,
right?
And you're trying to stay clean, and you're trying to like, and it's like, but it's just everyone
it's
else
everywhere.
Is. I remember being so resentful of like, I'm so mad that other people get to do this and I don't get to do it anymore.
Yeah.
I remember being so mad that I would walk down the street in New York. I'd be going to meetings, and on my way to the subway, I'd pass five bars and I'd see people in the bar laughing.
Yeah. Watching a game.
And I'd be
having nachos.
I'd be like, fuck those people.
Yeah.
They get to be in there and they get to be hanging out and eating pub food and having
pub
a good
food. God, I love pub food. Brownies.
I know. Pub trivia. Love pub trivia.
Pub trivia.
Doing some pub trivia. Like, to, you know, like I just.
Karaoke. Oh man.
So mad that people got to do it.
I don't know what the answer is, and I don't think there is a solution to this, but what I think what's important is what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what we're doing, we're talking about our not only our alcoholism, but how important it is that people realize that if you do have a problem with this, like there is a way, there is a solution for you to help.
Yeah.
Like to help you feel somewhat normal again.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But also, so okay, now this is something I didn't get to expound upon in the drugs episode, because it was this thing where it's like my friend was talking about psychedelics. That's like where he really came on to talk about was like empathic drug experiences on MDMA or on acid, where like he's
like
had
microdosing,
like,
stuff
yeah,
like
and,
that.
And like, yeah, and drug therapy and kind of like communing with like spirit realm through DMT or whatever it is.
Fourth
We're talking
dimension.
About experiences like that. Yeah, yeah. Breaking through to a new dimensionality versus dissociative experiences like what people experience who have opioid addictions, where they're just kind of sinking into a hole of numbness. And my friend who just passed away from this disease would talk about how his favorite drug was Ambien, because it just presented this. He just loved that everything just
blinked,
just went away.
Wow.
That it just, and so it was a very dissociative experience. And that's a very unhealthy experience with anything, anything you're using to disassociate and turn off and isolate, I think is unhealthy. But my friend kind of made this caveat on the drugs episode. He goes, well, we should be clear, we're not talking about heroin and meth. And then I was like, well, hold on. I want to stop you there, because I would like to address the kind of classist stigma that we have against certain drugs. And, and again, none of this is to say heroin and meth are cool or are safe drugs, and that they shouldn't be talked about with a certain severity. But it is to say there is a whole country's worth of propaganda, like this whole history of this country, we have a whole propaganda campaign to promote pharmaceutical drugs and legal drugs and to disparage dirty drugs, poor people drugs, you know? So it's like rich people use cocaine, poor people use meth.
Yeah, or Oxycontin, or pain pills.
Yeah, rich people use Oxycontin or like Lortab. Poor people use heroin. And it's this thing of like, you're not any better.
No.
And
you're still an addict.
And the dirtiness of these drugs, I've been thinking about this a lot. The reason why they're dirty drugs is because of it's the only form they exist in.
Right.
The only form that you can really like get heroin in is its street form.
Yeah.
And the form that like whatever your dealer is getting from his supplier.
Yeah, you can't go to a Foothill Family Clinic up here and ask
give me your cleanest,
sweetest, Mac.
Most like top shelf. Black tar dope.
Yeah, give me your cleanest coke. You know, this is from Mexico. Where are you getting this from?
And that the variety that we have of alcohol. Can you imagine it? So the analogy that I think of is, it'd be like if the only thing you could drink as an alcoholic was Everclear.
Oh,
and that's the only thing that exists. There's nothing else. There's no 3.2% beer. There's no schnapps. There's no rum for nice cocktails. The only thing
is Castmates, Jameson whiskey.
That 100% Everclear. Like, so if you want to drink, you have to be committed to getting fucked up. And so a lot less people would drink, because they'd be like, oh, it's so gross. Gross. You're just drinking just straight alcohol. It's not flavored. It's not, it doesn't go well in anything. You have to be committed to complete oblivion in order to, and that's the only thing that exists. And I'm like, can you imagine a world where these things are legalized or decriminalized and we're trying to view, deal with the reality that there are heroin addicts and there are meth addicts and it being illegal is not stopping anyone.
No, it's not.
So maybe we can supply them with safer drugs that don't have fentanyl in them and that don't, right. Maybe we can supply them with cleaner things that can scratch the itch of the alarm that's blaring off in their addicted brain. It's like people using Suboxone to get off of a heroin addiction. Yeah. It's like something needs to calm that blaring detox alarm centers, and methadone clinics and stuff like this. Right. But we only have the one form really for people using it on the street. And it's like the dirtiest, grossest form. So we've kind of created the circumstances in which these are the taboo drugs. But the numbers are there and alcohol is more deadly.
Yeah.
Alcohol kills more people and alcohol, but we just have, it's fancier because we have all these different, and you
can, there's bars on every corner.
And I also mean, you can use alcohol safely.
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
You can use alcohol responsibly and safely.
I don't know a lot of people that do that, but.
I don't know if right now you can use heroin safely in the form that it's in. I don't know if.
I've never done heroin, so I wouldn't know.
But I mean, it's from what I know about it, it's like, it kind of goes in circles of people who are looking for a hard experience anyway.
Right.
But I just think about.
See, part of the reason that I didn't do some of those heavy drugs is because I knew I'd be addicted to them. Because I knew that I had such an addictive personality.
Yeah, I was very scared of them for that reason.
And, the first time, I would do like Adderall.
Oh my God, Adderall would fuck me up.
Worst experiences for me.
Can you believe they give that to kids?
I went on a cruise, dude. I was on a 3-day cruise. I was up for 3 days straight on one 24-hour slow release Adderall pill.
Not even going over. I would take half a pill. My friends would give me half a pill for the night to like just kind of have a fun night. And I would be rolling my face off.
Oh, dude. Yeah, I would like, I remember I was like, I was so.
They give this to kids,
dude. And I was on a cruise. I mean, you know how much booze is on a cruise, right?
Oh, my God.
It's absolutely
insane. All inclusive.
Like, that was like heaven for an alcoholic.
Oh, an open bar. Anytime I was at a place where there was an open bar.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God.
Like,
I've been to a few things in the last 18 months, like weddings and stuff with open bars. And it's so difficult to be.
Oh, it's very hard.
I was actually very surprised at how hard I had to. I was at a wedding in Colorado and I had to leave and call my sponsor because I was like, I'm having a hard time. I'm around a bunch of strangers and people that don't know me.
Right.
And there's just a table full of free booze.
Yeah.
And no one will care if I walk up to it and just make myself the stiffest drink.
Yep.
Again,
open bar.
Can you imagine if people were getting married and they just, there's a tray of heroin for
here's a pile of cocaine over here next
for
to
anyone
the,
who would like to
the chocolate chip cookies. Like, go ahead.
We'll be doing a cocaine toast.
Oh, and we've got some Oxy in the bathroom next to the soap. So
if anyone would like to participate in the cocaine toast.
It's alarming because it's Like, you just lost your friend. Like you just, the amount of people that I hear.
And he was addicted to legal drugs.
He was addicted
to pharmaceutical drugs and alcohol.
Yep.
He almost never did heroin or meth or cocaine or anything.
Right.
His drugs of choice were alcohol, Adderall and Klonopin. And with all of this, it's like, I don't necessarily want society to change the way that we have fully embraced alcohol or to like be like, I don't want us to have like the labels on boxes like they have on cigarettes where it's like, this is what your teeth will look like. I don't necessarily want the commercials on TV, like the scare tactics or like the fear propaganda. I don't necessarily want that, but I do want us to start considering why it is that we're.
But why are you drinking? Like that's what I want.
We talk about unhealthy eating.
Right. We talk about unhealthy eating. Like, I mean, there's so many fads and diets out there.
Why are we just so okay with the idea of like, hey, if you can drink healthily, rock on. If you can.
Yeah.
And it's without being like, and I think that we do.
If you're listening, if you're listening to this and if you think that I just want people to. Is it a social thing for you? Great. Like if you can go to a party and have a couple drinks and drive home safely, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But if you feel like you need, you
just examine the nature in which you're consuming alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
I never did that. And quite honestly, I'm living on borrowed time right now. I should have been dead twice, three times over with the amount of crap that I put into my system, my heart, my liver, my brain. Like, sometimes I can't even remember what I did yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Like the repercussions of this. And if we can help one person just kind of sit back and kind of analyze, okay, why am I doing this? Like, what's the benefit of this?
Yeah. Just to think about it and think about.
And we're not here to tell anybody anything.
Mm, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we're just sharing our experience.
Yeah. Real quick before we finish, I wanted to go over like things you miss the most, like times you miss it. Cause for me, well, the times I think I'm going to miss it the most are like vacations.
Yeah.
Cause I loved being airports. On vacation and knowing, airport. I actually really miss drinking at airports
because so
I get really sick on the planes too. And I get really bad motion sickness and alcohol really helped me with that. And in the last year and a half, flying has sucked.
Concerts.
Yeah. Oh my God. It really helps you to like just relax and get into the music. I've had a hard time at concerts. Yeah,
but there's also times that I don't remember
the concert. There's after. Also, yep. So. I went and saw Conor Oberst at Carnegie Hall in New York. Conor Oberst. He's been one of my favorite songwriters for years. And I don't remember the concert.
You don't remember
Don't remember the concert. I was trying to not get too drunk before because I remember thinking I want to make sure I'm not so drunk that I don't remember the concert. I want to just like have a nice buzz going on.
Right.
And I got a little too drunk. And then I remember a couple things about the concert, but not much. And I remember like I'd go to comedy shows at the Comedy Cellar and I would laugh my ass off and not remember a single thing that anyone said the next day.
Right. Yeah.
And so,
movies. Yeah. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, there wasn't really anything that I was doing where I wasn't drunk.
Right.
So I missed it all.
Like, what I liked about vacations was feeling of no responsibility.
So no one
can judge me. I can drink all day long.
So vacations were difficult for me if I was with my family because my mom and my dad didn't like us drinking.
Oh,
And so I'd have to be really sneaky about it. But my brother. But my brother started drinking. Like he just started drinking openly in front of the family.
Yeah.
And so I thought it would be okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we went to San Diego about 3 or 4 years ago. 3 years ago. It was the first time I openly drank in front of my mom. And the sheer like looks and terror and like just the disappointment in her when I started doing that. We were at lunch and I ordered a beer. And like, you could hear a pin drop.
I remember we went to Hawaii once, and Adam and I bought a giant handle of whiskey and a giant handle of rum at the Costco.
Oh,
and
then the Costco!
And then like four magnums of wine. And my mom sees our grocery cart, and she goes, "I hope you're not planning on drinking all of that this week." And we went, "Yep,
yep."
And she goes, "Well, I'm going to be really disappointed if you do." And I went, "Well, get ready to be disappointed." because it was this thing where like, and I was also very determined to show my family that I'm going to drink in front of you, and I'm going to keep my shit together,
right?
And I'm going to be fun, and we're going to have a really good time on this vacation, and I'm going to show you that normal people drink, and that like, and I don't know how successful I was.
No, I wasn't successful at all.
I think Adam actually has been quite successful. I don't want to throw my brother under the bus.
No, I don't want to throw my family members under the bus.
And I actually think my brother's drinking is pretty healthy, and I actually think he has modeled to my family like healthy drinking and modeled to his kids what a healthy relationship. Like the reason why my partner isn't a heavy drinker is because she grew up with parents who were healthy drinkers,
right?
And who drank once in a blue moon and would drink kind of a glass of wine if they were out to dinner, and sometimes with like dinner at home, like on Sunday night they would like have a glass of wine. And so she never grew up thinking that like what you do is you just get shit-faced.
Yeah.
So she rarely, if ever, gets drunk. She does on like holidays sometimes, but drunk for her is like four drinks.
Yeah. And I think so. I had a party at my house last week, right? Mm-hmm. And I told everybody in the invite to bring their own alcohol.
I thought that was cool of you to
because all my, I haven't really changed a lot of my group of family. There's a few people that I don't see anymore, but I found myself like sitting back, mm-hmm. like when everybody was singing karaoke and dancing and having a lot of fun. Like that was the first moment that I missed it. Like I was like, oh man, I kind of want to just go in my kitchen right now and you know, like just have a shot or, you know, go outside and
yeah,
we smoke
can
with them.
We can be in danger in those situations
for
sure.
So, you know, and also that was the first moment like also that I was like trying to flirt,
mm-hmm.
like when I really wasn't, I didn't have a buzz on,
mm-hmm.
and like I was getting frustrated. Like I was like, why can't I like make this move? Like, why can't I, you know, be the normal, smooth, funny,
mm-hmm.
you know, charismatic Patrick that I feel like mm-hmm. I thought that I was, you know, who really knows?
You know what I found though this year? Cause I totally relate to what you're talking about. But what I found though is like, I'm rediscovering that my ability to have fun.
Right.
And I'm really realizing like, oh no, wait, I know how to have fun. And I get it into my head when I head into these situations, like a wedding with an open bar, I get it into my head that like, I'm going to feel like I'm missing out. But right. if I can get over that and just kind of try to really focus on and be present and enjoy the experience.
Yeah.
I realized like, oh yeah, that's right. I know how to do this. I went to my friend's wedding in Montana and it was in Glacier National Park. And it was one of the best vacations I think I've ever had. And I was so nervous for it all week long because we were staying on site. Everyone, the whole wedding party was staying on site at these like cabins. And there were parties every night.
Yeah.
With just booze every night.
I had a wedding like that in California recently.
And I never drank. I went and hung out with everyone at their cabins every night. And I would leave at like midnight and everyone would stay and drink till like two. And again, I love all my friends and I would have been right there with them 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But then Mary and I would get up the next day at like 8 a.m. and head into the park and we would hike all day long.
Right. And these guys were waking up at
noon or one. And I would see people later that night and I'd go, so have you guys been in the park yet? And they'd be like, oh no, man, there's no way I could go in. And I was like, you guys, we're at Glacier National Park. Like, you got to go in there.
The beauty of the world.
It's the most – and I just couldn't believe that they were missing out on – and I realized, like, all these vacations I would take to Hawaii and stuff, as much as I loved sitting on the beach drinking, I wasn't really taking in where I was. I was just enjoying the fact that I got to sit on the beach, no responsibilities, and get drunk all day.
Right.
And now I'm like, I can't wait to go back to Hawaii and really just, like –
let's go,
soak
man.
It in.
Let's go to Maui.
Yeah, you know, like take it in and just like, and Mary's never been, so let's definitely.
My buddy has a Jeep tour business.
Because it's the thing I think, like, how am I supposed to do a tropical vacation without a Mai Tai?
Right,
how am I supposed to do a tropical vacation?
Yeah, every vacation was built around booze.
But it's been fun to rediscover my ability to have fun.
I'm excited. I'm excited to like travel. I'm excited to date somebody sober that understands my sobriety.
Yeah.
You know, even if this person drinks, like, you know, so man, I'm, you know, I think we're on a good, we're on a much better trajectory of happiness.
Definitely.
So.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Do people know who I am?
I'll say it at the beginning.
Oh,
you can
you
say
go.
It if you want. Have you heard the show? I always do like a long intro.
I have.
I'll talk about.
You can talk about our.
I'll talk about how I know you, and I'll talk about, you know.
Our family's history.
I know. Yeah, it's.
The Archers and the Williams, man.
Yep. You're essentially a member of my family. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
you are.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
you are a member of my family.
Yeah, so. It's cool to go through this journey with you, and.
Yeah, man.
You know, I've been realizing too this in this last 18 months that not everyone's as comfortable as I am talking about this stuff and as we are.
Yes.
I'm trying to be respectful of that, but at the same time it's like honesty is one of the keys to my recovery.
It has to be.
And also, I don't know, you've talked a lot about, I think you and I both feel the same way about the tradition of anonymity. There are certain people who anonymity is really big for them, and I will respect that for them.
I respect it.
But for me, I just am like, we got to spread the word, man. Like,
me too.
We got to let people know that like that you're not alone. It's not just you. I want you to hear that my story, and hopefully you can go, oh my God, I didn't know that there wasn't, that someone else had...
Right.
It's so healing to hear your story.
That doesn't vibe with me. Like I have to be honest about this.
Yeah, I'm not an anonymous alcoholic.
Yeah, I'm not an anonymous alcoholic.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I want to respect people and traditions and things of that nature.
Uh-huh.
But for me, being open and honest about, because I was such a liar. Like, I mean, my entire life was just built around lies. That mm-hmm. like, this is the only way that feels normal and comfortable to me is to share this experience, even if it doesn't go well for me. Mm-hmm. I want people to know that, like, okay, like, I appreciate Patrick being open and honest about this, because I felt like this. Mm-hmm. I feel like this, and he's doing something, finally taking control of it, and that you can find some relief in that. And if you can, and you're listening to this and you want, you know, like, there's ways to do that.
Yep.
And that's all. Yeah. Like, I'm not tooting my own sobriety horn here. Like,
yeah.
Like, you got to take control of your life. That's it. That's basically what it comes down yep. to.
Yep. Cool. Yeah, beautifully said.
Love you, man.
Yeah. Love you too. Thanks. So there's a moment in there where Pat brings up, he says, hey, your buddy just died, you know, and he brings that up and we talk about it briefly. And yeah, it just occurred to me that I've never really said anything about it on the show, but it's in there. And we went on to talk a little bit more about what happened with my friend, but I edited some of that out. I'm not sure if you knew, but I do actually edit these conversations. Hopefully you don't notice the edits. If you don't, that means I'm doing my job right. And if you do, then good for you and your very astute ears. But, you know, sometimes I just try to cut conversations down for time, and sometimes I just try to keep them a little bit more on topic. Pat and I kind of went into each of our own individual struggles with depression and kind of like suicidal ideation. And I just decided that maybe that content was a little bit better for another discussion on another episode. It's not that I don't want to talk about that stuff. I think I do want to talk about that stuff. I think it's important that we talk about that stuff and that we make that stuff not so scary. It just didn't feel right for this discussion. But I will say, since it came up and since I do think it is relevant for this discussion, that, yeah, one of my very best friends in the whole world died a few weeks ago. And that's kind of something that happens when you run in alcoholic circles. His name was Bradley James Casteller. And he's one of the funniest people I've ever met in my entire life. And he's not alive anymore. He lost a long battle with depression that was severely made worse by persistent prescription drug and alcohol abuse. And I'll probably talk a bit more about that on other episodes. I've got some episodes on grief coming up and on death, and I'll probably do an episode on depression and stuff. And that's the thing is, I mean, I sort of talked about this at the beginning of the episode in the intro. It's just that sometimes in this blanket fort, it's going to get a little heavy, you know? And I hope that's okay. Because I love the inspiring stuff. I love talking to Jesse Pepe about spiritual growth and talking to the Washingtons about going after your dreams and talking to Juliana about other dimensions and other possible realities and other versions of ourselves that are existing in those realities and the different timelines. I love all that stuff. And that's kind of why I wanted to do this show, is I want to talk about all the things that I'm interested in. And I wanted to give you a little chronicle of the people that I'm so passionate about, my friends, the people in my life. And while I'm doing that, I'm also kind of giving you a chronicle of my life. And my life is all of those fun things. And I love talking about all those things, but it's also the other sides of all those coins. It's also the darkness and the kind of demons and the struggles that we all have to combat on a daily basis. And I think it's important not to leave that stuff out, you know? And I hope that's cool. I hope you get something out of it. And if you don't, that's okay too. If you just don't vibe with that stuff, if you just can't let that negativity into your sphere, I get it. You know, I said back in the very, very first episode, that intro episode, that maybe this is gonna be your vibe and you're gonna like the sound of my voice and you're gonna like the kind of things that I'm talking about. And that's cool. Welcome along and welcome aboard for the ride. glad to have you. Maybe you've come on since then and you like the show, cool. But if you don't, that's the great thing about podcasts. You get to go out and find what speaks to you. That's the cool thing about the internet. You get to go find your people and your show and the people who please you. You know? So cool. I feel good about that. Yeah. I feel good? Everyone good? All right. Good. People Pleaser is written, edited, produced, and hosted by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. Although on this episode, John Lane from that third episode in, that episode called Anger with John Lane, he helped me out a little bit. He did this melody line. Listen. That kind of top, that moving melody line, that's John Lane. That's John Lane, baby. He came over and I was working on the episode and I said, hey, you want to take a crack at adding a little melody line here? And he did. He found that little patch and did that thing. And I think it kind of makes the whole thing. It's kind of the rug that ties the room together. So thanks to John. This episode, as with all other episodes, is mixed and mastered by Marmalade Music. Thank you, Marmalade Music. Go to marmalademusicslc.com and hit up Chris for your project. Let him know that you listen to People Pleaser, and he's going to do it for free. He's going to do your first project for free. That's crazy. All right? It's crazy. I told him not to. He said that he wanted to. He's doing your first project for free. Go to marmalademusicslc.com. Hit up Chris for your first project for free. Okay? All right? Please do it. I'm going to go eat a Girl Scout cookie. Mary bought cookies, and I can't stop eating them. It's kind of a problem, but I'm going to go do it. I'm going to go eat, like, probably 2 or 3 Samoas, maybe half a sleeve of Thin Mints. I don't know. I'm going to try to not eat that much, but we'll see how it goes. All right. Thank you. I love you all so much for listening. Really, truly, deeply. Thank you. Go listen to my new single and rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts and share the podcast on your Instagram story and just generally just tell everyone what you think of it. And reach out to me. Reach out to me. If you like the episodes, if you're getting stuff out of it, reach out to me. That's my favorite thing. Okay, I'm going to shut up now. Okay, thank you so much. I love you. All right, bye.